Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 317, my interview with Lisa Michelle Jackson. At this point in the intro, I usually talk about our sponsors, Audible and PodcastCadet.com, but I am late posting this up because of a tiny meltdown I had last night. No big deal, just overworking myself. I'm fine. So I don't want to waste any time getting to this amazing chat with Lisa. This week on Yes But Why, I chatted with Lisa Michelle Jackson, an improv comedian, visual artist, dancer, and writer based out of Austin, Texas. Listen in as we discuss our culture of competitiveness and how different it is from the supportive, collaborative art of improv that we love so much. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 317. Lisa Michelle Jackson on viewing mistakes as gifts and turning your bad times into something good. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
Yes But Why.
Yes, but why?
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 This is the Yes, But Why podcast.
Industrial design never truly, like, imagines what it's for. You know what I mean? Like, you see a building. What was it? I was driving down the road the other day, and I take my kid out to swim class in Dripping Springs. So it's like a long drive there and a long drive back. And there's this terrible eyesore of a building, and I realized it was ACC. Like, everything in the area of around Dripping Springs, you know, it's all, like, about the nature and the, like, barren wasteland that is Texas and its beauty and all that. And, like, even the, you know, Capital One next to it is like, we get it. Like, our front greenery is very into the world, right? But then all of a sudden, you're driving down, everything's like fitting into the landscape, whatever. And then there's this huge brown, like so much taller than everything else building. And I was like, what is that? And I like look it up later and I'm like, oh, Austin Community College. Of course. It was some industrial architect who was like, yeah, what? We need a large rectangle. What are you guys confused about? Oh my god. Yeah, it's just so weird.
I've heard people talk about how the education system here is very parallel to the prison system, and how the buildings actually were contracted by the same firms. So like there's similarities in just the environment in public education here too.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah, you're right. There are architects just for like buildings that are, you know, government buildings, jails, and schools. Like, and it's like, that seems like a weird, and I get the idea of like the district only wants to have maybe like one architect on retainer or whatever, but like, come on guys.
Yeah.
Like, and this guy's just like married to his idea of what it is. He's like, guys, there's no other way to make a building. And you're like, all right, cool. Do you read that? There was an article about a guy who made like a dorm. They hired him and he made jails previous. And then they asked him to make a dorm at a college. And apparently he made it with like two exits for like 20 floors and like, and no windows, like no windows on the outside. There were like weird, like openings to the inside. You know what I mean? Like, so you'd open a window to the hallway, I guess, but like no natural light came into the building. And they were like psychologists were like, hold up before you build this, be aware this is a torture chamber and also a fire hazard in every way. Like, can we talk about it? And it like blew up in the news. And I don't even know if it was like they realized before or after it was made. You know what I mean? Like, it could have been like fully built and then the fire marshal came in and was like,
and you know what's fucked up about that is that they noticed that when we're talking about college kids, but you know what? All that same stuff exists for prisoners. Like, that's a fire hazard. That's a torture chamber.
Yeah.
Like, those are also human beings.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, I appreciate you want to take stuff away from people. I do. I get it. I know the way you guys think. But, like, you know, certain things like food, water, the sun, just the sun, just kind of a big deal. Like, just because we're animals. So, like, you know, you'd graze your cows, right? Yeah. So graze them, right? We just need a little bit of that. That fireball in the sky is real helpful to us. We're into it. Fills us up with some good stuff. So.
Not to mention, now you're going to get me started on prison. not to mention,
it's a
like,
great opener.
We are also a social species, and our brain is... That's part of what our brain needs, is to have social interaction and a healthy social interaction. So if you want someone to rehabilitate so that they can work in the social sphere in a more like collaborative, conducive way, the brain is not going to let you do that if it's separated from other human beings, because that's going to send it into fight or flight, you know?
Yeah. Not to mention that, like, all lessons are learned, like, with relation to other people. Like you can think your thoughts in your head all day, but until there's, like, a practical situation where you see it, you don't really believe it, right? Like, there's all sorts of stuff. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of, like, we don't believe it things. Even, like, science that I don't understand, but I'm like, listen, I'll take it. I get what you're saying. I don't understand. But, like, okay. But like, I feel like we try to, well, I was like, hold on, which huge problem should I broach here in this scenario? It's like, should we feel like we have to judge? Okay, let's start from the beginning, which is like, people only understand the world that's around them, right? So very likely a significant portion, not all, but a significant portion of the people who ended up in jail had a life that was probably very similar, but in different ways based on various other restrictive factors that then made them feel the exact same way. So we've actually not changed their lifestyle at all. We've actually just moved them to a different location. And that's not rehabilitative, because like, they're just moving from the gang on the street to the gang in the jail. They don't know that there's a life that's different than that. And the hardest part about like figuring out how to fix a person's perspective is that it's empirical to their life. So like, until a person's nice to them for no reason, they don't believe that can happen. Right. And like, until there's a situation in which it feels easy for them to be, they're always going to feel like, well, I guess life is hard. Right. And some people never get out of that circle because like, it is like, it's not easy. And every time you make a decision to do the right thing, often it is to your detriment. You know what I mean? Where you're like, I can't do this. Like, it's like, I shouldn't eat sugar. God, I wish I want it. Oh, but it's what I want. Why? Mm-hmm. And it's good and I like it. No, you can't. Like, and making that decision is dumb and I have to do it. But it's like based on empirical evidence of like, okay, the times when I've been off, this is what it's like. But if you don't, like in life, if this person goes from gang life growing up, even as a child, it's all around them. That's how what life is. You know what I mean? Exactly. So you can't assume that they're going to even grasp in any real sense. Okay, hey, you want to get a job? Cool. You can work at 7-Eleven now. What? Even the guy who worked at 7-Eleven that he knew was in the gang. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just everywhere. Like,
you're talking about one whole, like, portion of these people.
Yeah, but it's a subset.
Because of the racist system that we live in, there's a whole other portion of people that may have gone to prison by doing nothing.
Oh, yep.
And then they're put in this situation. So beforehand, they're like, you know what? You need to be put in prison just because you exist. And now you're in prison. We're going to show you how we treat people poorly. Now you're like, okay, well, I'm not supposed to exist and I'm supposed to have this lifestyle. That's what I can have. you know? And so it's like, you're creating something that wasn't even, you're creating a criminal possibly that wasn't even someone that thought they were a criminal.
Yeah. They think they're going to make people better by being mean to them when it's like, you know, you make people better by being nice to them. You know what I mean? Like that's not how you can like in fact, and we'll get into this as we transition into more pleasant topics. but like, that's actually one of the reasons why I both like improv and also think improv is considered uncool. Like I love improv because it's about lifting other people up. Right. I like it because it's about kindness, about like the worst thing you could do on stage is like shut down your scene partner. Like what if that was like a real in the world rule, right? Like the worst thing you can do. It is the only thing where there's so many rules where at the end of like my level one class, I go, okay, guys, just want to let you guys know this. You had a great recital. You did great. And now I want to tell you, you don't actually have to obey most of those rules. Like, they're kind of guidelines. And, like, now as you move on, they're vague notions. They're not hard and fast rules, okay? You can let those go. You can play how you want to play. And they're like, what? You know, but it's stuff like that. But the only one rule is you can't be mean. You can't shit on the idea of this person who presented it to you, whatever it might be. Imagine if we did that like in real life. Yeah. Right? Like
I'm very similar in that is what made me stay in this and made me love it is all those tenets that improv have of like collaboration and lifting up and mistakes are gifts. Mistakes aren't things that we want to wash away and fix and all that stuff, yes.
Yeah, there's something like deeply psychological about that too. But like in the world, you know, people think it's uncool because the world that we live in is sort of a mean-spirited kind of like, we don't want to admit this vulnerability that is kindness. And so it's almost like when stand-ups make fun of improv and you're like, okay, I'm sorry, your little hard heart can't make it through.
Right.
Like, I'm like, someone will love you someday.
So just to put us back into the harder topics. So my go at it is, well, we live in this westernized, misogynistic culture, and that is not the thinking there. You know, that's a competitive world. And so it's more about like separating people, individually and getting power over others and such. So that's part of why I think that's not cool.
No, you're right. The competition element of our whole culture, for sure. Yeah. I was just listening to a podcast where they were talking about the idea of like, what if we didn't feel like we had to compete against each other? Like, how great would it be if we didn't feel like we had to one up one another?
Yeah.
Like, I've lost my train of thought. Let me sideline us for 1 second to give you a little business because I feel like we're like super warm. Pretty much what the podcast is about creatives and like the reason how we got into it and how we stay into it. And like the choices we've made to maintain, and stuff like that. How do we continue in this when there's so many ups and downs, not just in the actual industry itself or the world of it, but like in the larger culture, both in the yay art, no art vibe that goes up and down. And then whatever rabbit holes we followed fall down is totally fine. So if like we end up getting back into the like tough culture discussions, that's also all right. I mean, I didn't mean to lead us down into that. I definitely like, I
wasn't sure if I did it or you did it.
yeah, that's probably me. I'm in a weird mood today. And I was listening to a weird podcast this morning while I was doing dishes and getting my coffee. So I was like, okay, I really got to stop listening to this before I had to put on music. Because I was like, okay, you need to have a regular conversation. Now, usually I like to start by talking about how you got into art as a child, but I will ask you that at some point because I would love us to instead maybe try to get back into the conversation that we were having a moment ago before I paused us, which was about the idea of improv in this world that we live in and how it's got a positive bent, but the world around us is not so positive. And how do we like reconcile that? And then at some point I'll remember to I'll ask you the kid question. That's my like framework for how we build the whole thing.
So to your question of let me plug in there. I'm at 69%. to your question about like art in a world that's not always yay art and the childhood thing, they're kind of tied for me.
Oh, right.
And I'm constantly in a mental battle about it, to be honest. I was raised by a biochemist father and an antique dealer mother. and my dad is also really into artistic stuff, cultural stuff, philosophic stuff. I am a lot like my dad. I am really both a scientist and an art lover and a philosophy lover. And growing up, I was really into all of it. I was into taking electronics apart in the house and not being able to put them back together. And I was into writing and musical theater and dancing and all of that stuff, drawing. And my parents were like supportive of that stuff. But there was like this point where one thing was okay and one thing wasn't. So it was like, if you really wanted to be serious as an adult, you needed to either be a Nobel Prize winning author or you needed to be a scientist. and so like to do art, just to do art, to have enjoyment through it wasn't so much an option. And so I ended up like, once I left high school, I was like, you know what, mom and dad, I'm just going to move to New York and I'm going to become a dancer and I'm going to musical theater. And they were like, we won't have anything to do with you if you do that. And so I got an engineering degree and I became a software engineer. And while I was really good at it, I was like 24/7 doing this one thing that wasn't fulfilling every part of my heart. And so I left it and went back to doing various artistic things. But I didn't want the pressure of like, I now have to be on SNL. I now have to be a Nobel Prize winner. But I kept kind of pressuring myself that way because it's what I knew. I think now I'm not in that place anymore. Now that I'm 52, now it's okay for me to just be who I am and to say, you know what? I love doing improv in Austin, Texas. Like the environment here is very welcoming and there are lots of opportunities. Whereas like if I went to New York or LA or Chicago, I feel like I would be one in a sea of many, many, many and not get as much playtime as I do here, but I also get the same caliber of, you know, the same level of skill here to play with. So that's great. I love it. Maybe people in Oslo don't know about it, but I do. I love it.
Oh, I don't know. The people in Oslo know a lot about the Austin improv scene. They're very pro the Austin improv scene. You laugh, but it's legit. You know, you guys love it. No, for real. But I appreciate what you're saying. And I feel like it's such a big thing. And kind of what we were talking about when it in that there's this competitive world that we live in and that our parents were baked into as well. I mean, at least in our generation, we're allowed to be happy. You know what I mean? Like we at least have a modicum of like, hey, by the way, you should potentially also have some personal satisfaction. Whereas, and I think it gets more and more, right? So I feel like millennials and younger, they're more attached to this idea of like, no, I need to have a fulfilling, deeply, like, whereas our parents, definitely not. And our parents' parents, oh man, happiness was literally not even on the list. Like it was just not even like part of what they expected in their lives. And that is wild. The idea that it has evolved in this way and like what got them there and the competitive nature is always, but now it's evolved in different ways. And, but for them, like their competition of, you know, societal, you know, keeping up with the Joneses had to do with like money and status. I feel like at least at this point, there is enough of the, you know, populace that kind of says like, I don't need to be a Kardashian. Like, it's all right. Now, there's a ton of people who do where like fame is like the most important thing. But I think that witnessing that, like, I know a lot of people say, oh, the more that kids see this, the more they want to be it. But no, I think the kids see for real. And so, like, if they are the kind of person that wants to be presentational, sure, they're going to be like, hey, I want my own YouTube show. I want to do it. But that person is just a performer in their heart. And so that's why they want to do that, right? Nothing wrong with that. But then there's plenty of kids who are like, well, I don't want to do that. I'm happy to watch this kid. He loves doing his skateboard tricks and I really enjoy watching him, but I do not want to do that, right? I don't want to be turn my camera on myself and talk, you know? And I think the beauty is like that it's okay to be either one of those things.
Right.
Like and that do, you can have
I do
that.
Think that. I do think that I might have a different bent on that if we didn't come from this culture that we were just talking about of competitiveness. If you talk about going out to LA to be an actor, it is that world. It is a competitive world. And I don't think it needs to be that. I don't think it's inherently something that leads to that, but in our culture that is a big part of fame and a big part of why I'm not interested in that.
You know, I wonder, because I was just thinking from the basic idea of competitiveness, there has to be sort of a scarcity, right? There's only a little bit available, so we all need to compete for what that is. And you know, to a certain extent, for certain things, that's true, right? So in New York, there's only so many Broadway theaters and there's only so many parts in Broadway shows. And let's be honest, guys, they're giving 90% of them to already famous people. So really, there's only 10% of these roles available to your regular actor in New York, right? So also, P.S., tough times, but you're only allowed to be on Law and Order once a year. I'm really you are. It's a rule. Like, so there's a scarcity. They create this thing. There's only so many parts. And then there's this competitiveness. I want to do that. I want to be part of that, right? There doesn't have to be. You're right. If we all just honored every single theater that put on Hedda Gabler was equal in your heart and mind, then who cares if it's the Broadway one or it's this one? But is it financials? Is it like this one pays more than that one? Is it because this one seems more important than that one? Like, it doesn't actually matter. They're all the same play, right? But you could do it in, you know, this random basement theater in Dumbo, Brooklyn, or you can be doing it on Broadway. And there's this value system of like what we think is more important. And I appreciate you bringing up this idea of Austin, because part of what you're talking about is almost exactly why I like Austin and why I like improv. Now, for me, they are tied because I didn't know about improv until I moved to Austin.
Well, so I didn't either.
Mind. Well, beautiful.
And I lived in Chicago for 5 years. I never knew about improv.
Totally. I was in New York City like when UCB was starting. Like, I'm like, how did I miss this? Like, I literally was there in the same area, never even went to a show. Not even aware.
Do you think we would have loved it as much if we had started in those two places rather than here?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't know, because my journey, and I don't know, I was part of a group that turned a little sour, and based largely on the leader kind of taking advantage of, you know, the power that is given to a leader. And I wonder, upon reflection for many years of what had happened, if I should have known right away. If, like, why did I join this theater when it was first starting? I should have known this guy was bad. I should have known this, like, culty vibe was coming out of him. But I didn't know anything about improv. And turns out, from what I've heard from people all over the world, tends to occasionally draw some culty vibes, yeah. You know? And sometimes a leader of a thing that has culty vibes will get wild and thick with power and, like, overuse this situation, right? And, like, and sometimes it's almost like when they say, if government would be better if we put new people in it. And I was like, the only people who are interested in being in government are terrible people. So that's the problem.
But if you look at other things that have sort of a, that have any kind of philosophy underlying it, like, that's going to happen anywhere. It happens in religion. It happens in business. It happens in, you know, the way we look at celebrities. Like, it is easy if there is a base of tenets for someone like that to come in. I do think it might be easy in improv in that it is a thing that frees people. Like, people come in out of this world that's so competitive and everyone's like, you know what? Be yourself. And also you get to play like a child the way you used to be allowed to do. And that is very like, oh, I can do all this. You may be more vulnerable in those instances to someone that takes advantage of that. I think the same thing in religion too, where people come in and they have a vulnerable place due to what religion is, and a cult leader can come in and be like, I'm going to take advantage of that.
I was also coming in fresh off a real rough breakup, and I often think about that as a connection of, like, why I fell in with this guy and then was just, like, following him around like everybody else was, like, and I was like, oh man, he was like my rebound guy, and it turned into improv. And the nice thing, the beauty of it is that I can come out of this rough situation and it still be okay. Right? Like improv in and of itself is not tarnished. The actual true, it's almost like the true meaning of Christmas is, you know, to be nice to each other, right? So so I have to come through this thing. But so my whole experience of Austin is improv, and it has newly changed since the pandemic because, and I know you think I was joking about how Oslo knows about Austin Improv, but I'm not joking. There is an international presence of Austin Improv to the point where I could then hear back reflected at me the vibe they get from the scene here. And that in and of itself was like, it'll be all right. Like not to say that, like, going through the tough time of this theater ending was right when I had my baby, so I wasn't really as involved. And then as I have this child, then the world ends in the way that it does, you know. And so I'm in, like, what is happening right now? But all of the talk that I've done internationally with people through this podcast and, like, just online has made me be like, okay, Austin is all right. Austin's got a great vibe. They put out great, you know, the connections with the other people in the world are kindness and sweetness. Like, that's what we're known for. And I'll take it. You know what I mean? Like, and I know that sometimes people's impressions are not truth, and I get that, but I was in such a dark place of like, you know, maybe improv wasn't the thing I thought it was, you know? And then, and then things were crumbling, and like shortly at, right before the pandemic was when all this stuff came out about UCB and the way they were running their business bad. And I was like, maybe we just can't do this. Like, maybe improv is a dream that like can't be fulfilled, and like if we just went back to teaching inner city kids like Viola Spolin, we'd be fine, but we keep trying to talk to adults, and adults are you know, and then talking to all the people all over the world about it, and how there's both a unified idea of what improv is and yet also such different wild variants all over the place. And again, just hearing back, oh, Austin, this person in Austin helped me. This person in Austin, we're connected. We are, I do this troupe with this person in Austin. Like the fact that the tendrils of kindness come out of Austin to the world was like, okay.
Ugh, you're making me want to cry when you talk about this.
I mean, it is, talk about whatever you want with New York and LA. We all acknowledge them in their position as far as the show business world and how sort of important they are, and we get it, they are, but in improv Chicago and Austin really connect with the overall world, you know, versus, you know, everybody knows who Brad Pitt is, but do they know who Brad Pitt is? They don't. Right. But with us, like, they have stories, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, the stories that people have told me where I'm like, wait, you know, so-and-so? What? Like, amazing.
You know, it's funny you bringing that global thing up, because so right before the pandemic, so a few months before that, I had to leave my marriage, and it was pretty devastating. It was sort of a little bit of a side swipe thing. Sure. So I didn't expect it coming. And then very quickly on the heels of that, my dad went through a lot of health issues, and I'm very close to my father. He's in his 80s. And then everything shut down and I was alone. I don't have kids or anything. So I was alone in this house that I spent in a 10-year marriage, and like FaceTiming my father who's got dementia, and in fact, for the first 6 weeks or so, I saw no humans. And so the things that I do that give me life are improv, and dance mainly. And I really know now after the pandemic, I am an extrovert. I thought I was sort of 50-50, but now I'm like, no, you're like 95-5. but the thing that really, really kept me alive was that the Austin theaters immediately went to online improv. And so it was not just that I still got to do improv, I still got to see my people in some sort of way. It was that I now also had sort of a new medium that my brain could like play with and see, what's this? What does this do? And so I didn't have to like constantly be laying in the fetal position on the floor, like processing my grief. So anyway, because of that, it also led to being global. Like now I was doing global improv with people from all over the world, and it was fascinating. And, so anyway, just like you saying that is important to me, because it was also very personally important to me to have been doing improv with all these people all around the world.
Yeah. I mean, it matters to them too. Like the people that spent their time on Zoom screens, I mean, there is a never ending, like the globalization of just community in general, but improv, it's done. Like we can never not know these people now. We can never not like think about them. Like it brings international tragedy so much closer to home when you hear about something. Like, you know, yesterday stuff going on in Texas and I've got people that are international sending me messages. Like, that is a wild situation to have this connection with people all over the world, right? And the beauty of it is, to bring me back to the sort of hope that is improv, right, is that even though we live in this like harsher competitive culture, the U.S. culture, and connecting with the global community has really shown me a lot of that, like made me see it in a way that I never saw before. When you're just chatting with people and then you're like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the way my brain works because my whole culture builds me to do this. Like, and that's so, it's like I'm fighting against it to do improv, whereas some people are doing improv and it's like just a flowing river that they're already in, right? Like, and you're like, oh, I guess that's how it works, right? Yeah. You know, yeah. And even though tough things happen, even though the beginnings and sort of development of my improv journey had this like tarnish on it, connecting with these other people across the world and their kindness and the discussions we had during the pandemic about how to improve and how to be kinder and more equitable to each other, even just seeing other threads with people from other cities talking about it, just the discussion alone makes me know that, like, there's so many good people in this world and that, like, you know, there will always be kindness. Even though there might also always be people that are taking advantage, there is such a huge population of kind human beings that want to maintain this, like, art form that is sharing and taking care of each other and, like, just having the most fun. And the fact that those people exist at all is all I need. Like, I don't have religion. I have that. I have belief that these kind human beings exist. Yeah. And that buoys me.
If you look at even this one person, in our scene, one or two people that in our scene, like, they are the smallest portion, you know, like if there's 100 people here that are still doing it the way we thought it was, that are still living improv the way we thought that improv was a goodness. Well, there's only one of those people that's a bad apple or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. No, totally. Totally. And to be honest, to bring it to the real, when the theater crumbled and everyone rallied together to have the back of the community that was trying to, like, extricate themselves from that rough situation, it was, like, so life-affirming. Like, there was so much support from everywhere that it was, like, this is the most, like, such an artistic success story beyond anything. Like, we were, like, you know, get out, demon. And the demon got out and we all high-fived and hugged and it was the best.
So this speaks to me to what improv still is. Like, that whole mistakes are gifts things. Mistakes are opportunities.
Yeah.
And the way everyone responds to something, to the situation of oh, this bad thing happened and now we're rallying about it. Oh, the pandemic habit, now we're gonna go online. Like, it's like, that is improv. That's the human spirit, is like, we will not go down.
Yeah.
We will keep trying.
Yeah, absolutely. And that to continue to connect it to improv too, like, I love the idea of, like, an improv scene doesn't end until it ends. So keep trying, keep figuring it out, keep being like, what else is in your backpack? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there are so many scenarios where it's like, no, you can't quit. This is not a quit kind of thing. You have to be released. And that is not something you're in control of. Like, in fact, that part of it is such a, like, when I'm teaching level one and I have to explain to people, like, you are not allowed to end your own scenes. The other people have to do it for you. It's part of the teamwork of it, right? And of course I say to the people, like, if you're in the side, like, and you know they need it, like, get rid of that scene. But if it's going well but they don't think so, it doesn't matter. If it's going well, it's going well. keep it going. like, you know, we all hate ourselves in some way. I like to open with that too. By the way, we all hate ourselves. It's fine. Let's start past that. All right. We get it.
So this is making me think of a tangential improv thing. And that is that, so one of my troops is Echo Lake, which is organic improv, nothing but organic improv for those around the world that don't know. It can be more than just that game in the middle of the Herald. It can be 20 minutes long. And quite often, I've been in Echo Lake shows and I've gone, how can I make my life be like this? Mm-hmm. Like, it is just continuous. It is just continuous whatever. There is absolutely no judgment about what is happening in this scene. And we can be laying on the floor, acting like dogs for 5 minutes, literally, and it's okay. And I don't know why I went on to that because, oh, I guess because you were saying like it just keeps going, right?
So yeah,
it made me think about this, about how part of that style of improv is to just keep going until you discover something else.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Oh, well, that what you just said, until you discover something else, makes me think of the like other, there's so many acting exercises where the purpose is to push you past the thing that you're doing. Like you do repetition so that you can finally break through of the wall that you have built. Like, and yeah, sometimes there's something really great about not only being the person in the show, allowing your vulnerability to like create whatever it's going to create and discover whatever it's going to discover, but also to be in the audience and watching that happen in real time. There's something so like being with you on a journey that I couldn't otherwise be on. It's like, yeah, it's like being inside your head when you're having like an acid trip, but like it's happening right there in front of me and I'm watching you make the decisions, like, yeah. And also you're fine, like you're not on, yeah, acid. But like I actually used to love when I lived in New York City, and I'd love to know the years that you lived there, but like I when I lived in New York, oh wait, you decided not to go there.
Chicago.
Oh, that's right. But New York, when I lived in New York City, I was all avant-garde, like all of the art, all of the open mics. It was all like weird people doing weird things in like costumes or naked or body paint. There's a lot of glitter. And there was one open mic and it would end with a dance party to George Michael's Freedom. And it was like, classic, like avant-garde, mm-hmm, random, but the whole essence of the community was loving each other for whatever you put up on stage. That these open mics that became part of this group that we called the Art Stars, and it was like total support for everyone, no matter what it is. It's good, it's bad, it doesn't matter. It's, you're supporting the artists. Everyone's a star, everyone's an artist, like, mm-hmm. And that's where I started in New York. That was why I headed into improv, is because, mm-hmm, that was it. But it also very much honed my deep love for the very weird and doesn't make sense. Like, yeah, I will sit in a theater where there is a crazy avant-garde like guy covering himself with paint, and like then there's a like rubber ducky sequence, and then he dances, you know, like in the moonlight, and I'm all like,
yeah,
this is it. Like, I don't know. I love that stuff.
No, I do too. I absolutely love it. And I think that, I think that's part of why these like organic shows that I do, I'm like, how do I live my life like this? Because I see the world that exact way, where I'm like, oh, humans make everything so serious and it's so ridiculous. And that is the joy to me, to know that we can make these things so serious and it really doesn't matter in the scheme of things. Like we are a dot floating in the universe. Nobody cares.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What was it? Yesterday, my child asked me the cutest question he's ever asked maybe not for his whole life, but right now, he asked me yesterday what the difference between Australia and Neptune was. And so I was like, all right, well, let's have this discussion. And we started with the planets. And when I pulled up a picture of the planets so that we could talk about them and discuss how what they were and where Neptune was, and he loves the planets. But I opened it up and it was like a, you know, to scale picture-ish. And Earth is so tiny. I was like, here's Neptune. And we talked about Neptune for a little bit. And it was like, wow, that's a big one, huh? Oh, yeah, that's a big planet. Okay. And I was like, which one's Earth? And he points to this tiny little dot here on the side. And I was like, that's where we live. And he's like, what? I'm telling you, that's us. We're that tiny dot right there. And like in the picture, like Neptune is so big. So like it's so much bigger than us, right? And there's not even like people that we're aware of on the spot, right? I mean, it's crazy, right? So we're these tiny little dots, right? So then I go to, okay, so let's go to Earth. Let's look at the map of the Earth and we'll find Australia because Australia is on Earth. And he's like, oh, I see. Okay. So I open up a map and I show him Australia and he's like, ooh, okay, that's fine. That's fine. And then I show him where we are and he's like, well, that's not close. No, no, we're literally on the opposite sides of the Earth, like legitimately opposite. I'm pretty sure we'd drill into each other if we did it, right? Yeah. I mean, that's how crazy it is, right? But we're still, and I went back to the other picture, that tiny little dot. Like, yeah. And he's like, huh. And so I had a little existential chat with my child. It was like geographical turned into existential where he's like, but we're so small. And like the beauty of having those conversations with my child, who's just purely asking because whatever he's watching on TV has referenced both of those things. And he's like, And I loved having the discussion. It was the best. But then it like, he goes off to do whatever he's playing back to his Legos or whatever. And I'm sitting here like, oh man, like having like deep thoughts about all this because it really is so interesting to imagine how we are. So just these little smart monkeys that are having a good time. Oh man. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that got me through the pandemic sometimes were it was like, we are animals. We're just reacting like animals would in a scared environment. Don't get mad. Don't get mad.
Yeah.
Like it's okay. You know,
that all that stuff that you just talked about reminded me of something my dad said to me a couple years ago that, it was actually after leaving my husband that, it just has been an anchor for me through all of this. He said, I asked him, what is life? And he said, this was before his dementia even, he said, life is a series of changing relationships. And he said it in the context of this marriage, but I knew that he meant like everything. Like that, like your discussion with your son was about a couple of different relationships and how this relationship in this context is one thing, but in another context, it's a completely different relationship. And it's about how, you're having a certain kind of a relationship going on in that moment with your son, but then he's off doing this other thing. He's having a relationship with his toys or whatever. And you're having a relationship now with your existential stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, it's this anchor of like, okay, we're all just animals. There is just a free flowing. We are actually really just energy. We're all just like electrons going about doing this and then changing our relationship to whatever's happening now. So, you know, it's all okay.
Yeah. You know, I wonder sometimes if like earlier when we were talking, you mentioned your age, like, oh, I just got to it now. But I feel like there is a time, there's so much time when you're worried about other things that when you get older, that you're finally free to allow your brain to see. Like you're finally like, okay, I've been through a bunch of things. I know what really matters and what doesn't. And who knows, maybe we're going to get older and realize that this perspective us was like, oh man, like, am I going to turn 70 and be like, oh my God, how naive was 44-year-old me? Oh, oh my God. What was she even thinking? Oh, you know, like what, you know?
It is like, well, I would tell you, a 52-year-old woman, it is like going through puberty again because your hormones are doing some different things. Sure. So maybe that is what I'll look back at my middle school 52-year-old and be like, yeah. But I think that I've really had this perspective all my life, and it's been more about like what mattered to me has always been this. And it's been more about like, why doesn't that matter to the rest of the world? I just kept getting confused about why it, I feel so much in my body, like this is what's important. But when I go out into the world, that's not it. And now at this age, it's less about saying, oh, now I know what matters. It's more about saying, oh, now I know that it doesn't matter if it doesn't matter to other people because it matters to me. Right?
Yeah. You know what? You really make me think, though, like, I wish that we would all just let each other be who we are. Mm-hmm. Like I really appreciate this idea that you're like, no, this is who I was all the time. I'm not just learning. I'm not just at the point now where I've figured this out. I always knew it. It's just only now have I accepted that other people don't think that. Right? And I think that all the time too. I think about my perspective in the world and how I'm like, why don't other people think this? And I used to get real mad and try to like change them. And it occurs to me that like literally all strife in the world is all of us trying to force each other to think the way we want. And I feel like, yeah, sure, there's plenty of people who are going to think ways where I'm like, whoa, that is appalling. But if I like let them do their thing over here and I was allowed to do my thing, would it work better? Would it not potentially cause this competitive vibe that we need to be better than one another versus just like, well, that's the way she looks at the world and that's the way he looks at the world. And, you know, that's just it. Like, is it the pressure that causes, you know, us to act out? And you know, people don't understand me, so I need to show them, you know, as opposed to like if we were all just like, yeah, you know, it's fine. That's what he wants to do. Even little basic stuff. Like I have friends whose kids are going off to college or whatever. And like whenever my husband and I see that kind of stuff, we have these discussions like, you know, both of us went to college, but Chris always says like, I don't know if college was right for me. And for me, college was totally right for me, but we're like open to whatever our child ends up wanting to do. And also what sort of culturally becomes the thing, like as it gets older, like, it's like, if he's like, hey guys, I want to ride a tractor and work on a farm. We're gonna be like, great, do that. Like, that sounds good. But that's us. We want to squash this idea that we need to tell each other what you have to be and instead just be like, who are you? I'm interested, you know? And to a certain extent, to bring it back into improv, I really think that that's what improv classes are doing, is honoring, or most improv classes, certainly the Austin improv classes, are focusing on honoring each person and what they're bringing to the table and illuminating their beauty versus putting them into a prepackaged, this is what you have to be.
Yeah.
Like, you have to fit into these boxes.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think because we're humans, because we live in this culture, it's kind of complex and there is some of that that occurs, but I do think that the baseline of it is like, by the fact that we are not editing anything, by the fact that we are improvising, I bring in this thing and then you come in and you bring something else in and we push them together and we say, oh, what's this new thing? And so we are collaboratively making something.
I think the idea of us pushing something together and developing, something together is, really an important part of improv, but I think improv is populated largely, by artistic people, and artistic people have a tendency to have the openness we're talking about. The right. idea that, you know, people let people who be who they are, and like kindness to people and appreciating them. And yeah, I mean, there's probably plenty of people that don't and that also could be considered artists for sure. But like with the whole tenet of improv being combining, like it's almost like if that's not something that you are, you're going to leave that class. Like, so the pool of people already doing improv is like, the first thing that we know about them is that they're open to collaboration.
Right. Yeah.
Like, and that's.
Yeah. I totally agree with you on that. What's funny to me is how many civilians that I'm calling the people that don't do improv will say to me like, I can't do that. And I'm always like, you're doing it right now. This is literally what everyone does every day. If you're having a conversation with me, it is the exact same thing. You're coming in with a unique character, which is you. And I'm coming in with a unique character, which is me. And we are having a, you know, we are creating something together word by word. And it's called a conversation. So yes, I agree with like whoever's staying in this world is, yes, artistic and collaborative, generally. But it's just funny to me because the people that aren't in it think they aren't doing it, but they are doing it.
Totally. Also, they think that it's an impossibility. It's like, no, it's literally just a game. You know, and what's hilarious about it, well, kind of to bring it back to what we've been talking about consistently, is it is a step away from real life for a moment. It's like, would you like to take a break from the dog-eat-dog world for a second? Come on in. We're going to let our guards down. We're going to laugh and have a nice time. And you're going to chat with strangers about things who, after time, won't be strangers to you. And then it'll just be you and your friends hanging out in front of an audience. And I don't know about you, but that sounds like the best day. Like, yeah. Like I get to talk on a stage with my friends in front of an audience. Guys, you've checked off all the boxes I'm looking for. You're talking about how you're an extrovert. Yeah, absolutely. And sadly, my only performances are like this. Like, it's like, Lisa, you're my audience for like an hour or so. And I'm all like, da, 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 da. That's, you know, that's what I get. But at the same time, like, yeah, you're right. There's something so natural. I always say that, like, in my first improv class, I sit them down. And I go, all right, I need two people up on chairs on the stage. And they get up and I go, okay, now talk to each other. And they're like, about what? And I was like, well, you've never met, so whatever. I was like, ask them where they're from. Talk about how you both lived in Cincinnati 10 years ago. Like, literally anything. What, did you eat ice cream earlier? They are lactose intolerant. Discuss. Right. Like, whatever it might be. You know, I was like, we've all just met. I don't know. Tell us about who you are, you know?
And that is all about finding connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, the base of us. The connection of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Bringing it like full circle there, Lisa, with like, we need community. We need to be together in a group and have human interaction to like really have the breadth of human experience. You know, like you need to be able to connect to people. Good, bad. I mean, if you want to have a good day, if you want to have a day that's getting better, you know what I mean? You have to be connected with other people.
Yeah. Something you made me think of. So the other aspect of improv, of like, we can make up anything. So we can pretend anything. We all did it as children. It's part of the way our brains are constructed that we are able to construct a future and a past inside our brains, so that we can solve problems and imagine futures. Our brain setup is, I think there's a lot of like neuroscience that is involved in improv. And don't ask me to say a bunch of science about this, because I don't know all the science about this. But I do know that one way that rats learn to fight and catch prey and or whatever. They don't catch prey. I don't know why I said that. they learn to fight with others by playing together. So these are like, improv is like scenarios where you can learn to do other things, where you can understand what's going on in other worlds, in other people's lives. I feel the same way about fiction, where I can read fiction, I can play it through in my mind, and now I'm like, oh, I understand a completely different person's point of view, etc.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there is something very important about understanding other people's point of view. And I think that, like we were talking about how if we would just let each other be who we are, I think that part of the artistic bent, certainly for me, is to understand different ways that different people look at things. When I was a kid, I grew up in Boston, which is, it's not publicized, but it's a very racist place. And my mom was super not into that at all. And so she would bring us around to different places, to like different friends of hers that had different cultural backgrounds, and be like, this is this family. I want you to know about their life, and I want you to know that they're both different from us and the same. And so you don't treat people differently just because this detail is different about them. And we'd go to the next thing and meet a different person. And, you know, we'd go to like Hanukkah parties and things to like learn about different, and she'd like explain it to us. And sometimes she'd get it wrong. You know what I mean? Like, and they'd be like, what, Carol? What are you telling her? Okay. Listen, and they'd tell me, and even the idea of her being wrong but wanting to be right and trying to teach us, it always showed me, you know, like to be open to different things going on. And certainly always artistic myself, always wanted to be in theater, play characters. The idea of getting this breadth of characters presented to me and told, I was told that there were different perspectives in the world, like right away, I was like, this sounds cool. So many characters. Who can I be? Oh, what does she do? Okay. Like, what's this guy's job? All right. Like, you know, and she'd host political parties at the house, a lot of letter writing events, and like we held picket signs. So there was always different characters that I got to meet and different people. And the idea of meeting so many different kinds of people and meeting their characters helped me as an actor and certainly as an improviser to come up with and develop and accept and appreciate all these different characters and walks of life. And even the students that I've had over the years, where like a person walks in and you're like, huh, that person is not the normal person who comes into an improv class. And I give them just like so much love in that moment of like, what got you to my door? Cause I'm happy you're here. Mm-hmm. Like whatever it might be that made you make this decision. I'm fascinated. I want to know what it was. And I want to know how to give you what you want out of this situation. Like, and just the interest in that I think is so important when it comes to being a performer, being an artist, being open, and also sort of sidebar an unusual perspective of the world and one that my whole life, like you, was like, why don't people, I don't understand why we don't appreciate different people from different places. What?
Yeah.
Why are we not excited? Oh, okay. What? You know, like, oh yeah. Man, that's why, like, when I lived in New York City and different other places that were like just insanely diverse, and I'd be like, you're from where? That's great. Yeah. Show me on a map. Like, or whatever. Like, love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Yes.
But not everybody's like that. And I have to be okay with the fact that, like, I get to meet this person who may have only lived in this one town and like that's all they know. And like, I can be mad at them because they never met the, you know, amazing people that I know from this place and that place. And, you know, even Boston, which I don't really love too much anymore because it's kind of a rough place and I try not to live a rough life. But, you know, I appreciate them and I get it. I get it, man. You know, hey, you do you, Boston. Right?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I guess they're all part of the fabric as well, you know? They're even those that have had much more constraints are a particular point of view that comes to us and gives us a new perspective, I guess, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just trying to honor them all. You know, the ones I like, the ones I don't like. You know, it's almost like I was listening to an interview with an actor about, he was talking about a character that he played, and the character was particularly unsavory in the plot of the show. He was not, he was very much like a guy causing trouble in this family, in the story. But when he talked about his character, he talked about like all the good things about him and all the reasons why he was justified in doing what he did. And they were like, how could you think that? And then they're like, wait, he had to play the guy. So he had to really understand why this guy would make these choices and what it was that motivated him and really believe that that was the right move, because that's what people are. They're just making moves, thinking they're making the right moves. And sometimes they're the right moves and sometimes they are not the right moves. But they think, some logic in their brain has convinced them, yes, this move, right move, doing it. Like, and it's like, I mean, it's like the beauty of television, I like to say, is that they're never going to learn their lesson. So like the television show can't continue if they learn their lesson, because the whole point is that they're not going to learn their lesson. And that's both the best part and the most infuriating part. And the only part of real life that we could possibly do to improve upon that is to occasionally learn from our lessons. Oh my goodness, man, this has been a deep, deep talk. Lisa, we are deep from like seconds in. And guys listening to this, you only are getting a part of it. Like, where I'm going to cut out the, like, so much of the beginning we were talking about, because it was just off the cuff. But like, we have been deep from like word one. It was like click hello on Zoom, and it was like, let's discuss society. I love it. Ooh.
I'm going to listen to this podcast and be like, why did you remove all that prison talk?
I can put it back in. I just was like, hey, what a weird thing.
Speaking of, I want to tell you one of the most rewarding things that I have done in improv that I don't think a lot of people get to do. And I do want to talk about it on here, because if there are people around the world that don't know that this exists and want to create programs like this, I support you doing that. And that is that, there's a group in Austin called Truth Be Told, and it is a group that brings the creative arts into the prison systems here. So they go in and they'll they have writing classes, and they do their writing classes in such a way where people are encouraged to understand how they got to where they are and what they want to do from this point on. But they also bring in artists to perform for the prisoners. And I have gone several times to a few different prisons and done improv for them. And it has been literally the most rewarding shows I have ever done. They are very excited about it. They want to know more about it. They want to learn how to do it. They are appreciative that you have shared it with them. And anyway, I just want to mention it. And everyone in Oslo, please make a program for it.
Oh yeah, and I don't know what the Oslo prison system is like, so maybe
they
don't
even
need
have
it.
Prison systems?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. They're just like, they have a stern discussion about how they shouldn't have done it. You're like, you're right. I shouldn't.
Yeah.
Now this is interesting. So, did you perform with them?
Yeah, not with the prisoners, but for them, yes.
Right. I meant with the group. Like, instead of teaching a class, you were part of a performance.
Yes. Yes. I've gone with. A few times I went in a duo that I was in, and then I've also done it with a group of women, which was really cool, because the duo was myself and a male, but the prisons I've gone to have been all female prisons, and so it was very rewarding for me when I finally did a group that was just all women. Not that I wasn't rewarding with just my duo, but doing, just having all these women see other women that are performing, that just felt very good to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I often think about how sometimes the service that we are doing when we are performing improv is to show people that this level of freedom is okay. Mm-hmm. Like that it's a possibility. You know, yeah. You can really like get to a point of comfortability with a group of people that you can truly be reading each other's minds and developing things in a way that is, I mean, because aren't the best, whenever like there's a festival and there's a line out the door for some particular troupe that everybody wants to go see, in some circles, it's the famous people, but in improv circles, it's usually just the ones that are so uber connected with each other, that are so in tune that they are making moves that are like 47 steps ahead. Because if improvisers like your improv, oh, that's got to be really intense. Like yeah. When people on the street like your improv, great, good for you. You're probably very funny. And I bet you there's a lot of great gags you got going on. Like the reason why everybody knows what Whose Line Is It Anyway is because it's full of gags and like just people who are like, who's having fun? We're having fun, right? And the vibe yeah. of that is wonderful. And I'll take it every day and I watch it all the time. And I'm like, yes, I need this pleasantness. Mm-hmm. But when you watch people making an entire like play up or stuff like that, it's just the joy of, and you're an improviser watching it, like it's like so high level to watch them do this, and like little things where you know what the 47 steps were from one thing to the next, or when somebody drops a bomb on somebody else and like you see it in their eyes when they're looking at each other and they're like, oh yeah, I'm a dog, am I? All right. And they're like, of course I'm a dog. Why would you say anything else? You know how I feel about dog politics. Like I love watching those where you see them like eye each other like, huh, all right. Like, and the beauty of that.
You know what's, yes, I am on board for everything you said. And what's funny about that to me is that I have been doing improv for 15 years. And because people are individuals and because they have a vast network of history going through their decisions, I still constantly have moments when I'm watching an improv show and they make a choice and I go, how did they do that? Like, as if it's magic, as if I do not know how to do improv.
It is a little magic, though. I mean, it's a little magic. It's the, I would venture to say, and it aligns us with further uncool art, but it is just like magic. Like, it's like when you go to a magic show, there's something about the surprise that this person can accomplish what they're doing with their little pleasant face and their outfits and like potentially props. Like, there's just, you're like, how is this person, what are you talking, what, I, how is this a thing? And again, sorry, improv, to ally us again with an equally uncool art. But, you know, I'm sorry. I'd rather be uncool and be doing this than be cool and, like, I don't know, waiting on a waiting list for, like, the one class left at, like, UCBLA. Like, no thanks.
You know, I think that is a big part of what I love about improv is the how much – the acceptance of surprise and mistakes. You know, like, there's a lot of movies now that I have no interest in because I'm like, oh, there's the formula. I see the formula happening. Books, fiction books, I'm having that with.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm 52. I know what the things are that happen in the world. These are the formulas. And I just want some surprise. And I feel like improv is just a really big part of it, is to say, oh, this thing got given to me. And now what can I do with it? I wasn't expecting it, but now I'm going to make it right. I'm going to make it the thing that was supposed to happen.
Yeah. Also makes total sense why you're super into organic improv as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like either like harsh forms or just like, let's figure out how I can slither out of this big bang and make something.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love it. So I want to ask you one final question. We've had such a great deep talk. Awesome. Awesome talk. But I wanted to ask you, in this world, you know, we mentioned that like during the pandemic, there was a lot of online improv and whatnot, but Austin's kind of back in person. Maybe this is what it is. Maybe it's something else. What are you doing to fill up your own creative cup?
In all honesty, I am struggling a little bit with that. I think that the pandemic got me into some routine places, and those are not inspiring for me. And so I'm having some transition now where I'm like trying to get out of those routines, but my brain wants to keep going back into them.
Sure. Sure.
It's a little bit of a struggle, but one thing that happened during the pandemic was that I started doing a visual art. And so that has been a place of inspiration for me. I do what's called taxidermy art. I'm not necessarily doing taxidermy, but it's called that overarchingly, where I work with dead items. I work with dead insects and bone and whatnot. That has helped me be in that creative space. A funny kind of one right now is that I'm binging television shows that I would not, like, I was never a TV person, but during the pandemic, I sort of started binging shows. And I'm watching shows right now that I'm like, what? Who are you? Why are you watching this show? And I think that that is another, like, source for me to just, like, get in stuff that isn't typically my thing. You know, I'm watching, I just finished a thing called Bling Empire. It's about, like, the most rich Asians in LA, I think. I mean, like, ungodly rich. Like, they can do literally anything they want to do. So it's kind of two cultures that I know nothing about. I know nothing about most Asian cultures, and I know nothing about having $600 million a year as your net worth. those are things that I'm getting inspiration from, I guess.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not even, don't judge yourself on, like, whether or not you're getting inspiration from them. As long as they're not sapping energy from you, I think like that's what it is. It's like whenever I talk about this with people, it's only something that I've become recently connected to, is that you have to give back to yourself as well as put out, right? Like, I expend so much energy on other people, on my work, on creating things and making projects, but then I need to spend the time and find out what things are fulfilling me, right? I'd love to read, but I just don't read that much. I do the Audible because I love a podcast, so I listen to the books, but I'm just like, what? How am I? You know, and so it's like me wandering, driving around listening. In fact, during the pandemic, the way I got out of my house, because it was me and my husband and my tiny child, and I was like, cool, I need some breaks now. And so I would be like, I'm going to go take a drive. My husband's like, okay. And so I'd drive around and just listen to stuff in the car for like an hour or 2 hours, just like driving around. That was my, like, safe space. Yeah. And now it's kind of become my thing. Like, every morning when I drop my kid off to school, I spend like an hour driving around listening to a podcast. And that's like my, okay, let's get ready for the day. Like, which is also why when I got in the conversation with you, I was already like, listen, people are talking about prisons and institutional. Like, okay, I'm sorry. Next time I do an
and
next,
I was just like, oh, that is my favorite topic.
I need to remember the next time I'm doing a podcast in the morning, I need to be like listening to like pleasant, like sweet, you know, like interviews with like comedians. I'm like, oh, right. I was like, I got a little serious with this one.
No, you were on point for me. You were on point.
You met me where I'm at, baby. You knew what was up. Oh, man. This has been a great conversation. You know, Lisa, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your thoughts and opinions on this artistic life we're living with me. I appreciate your perspective so much. And just thank you so much for sharing it with the audience.
Well, thank you. It was a wonderful time, and I was just super happy to get to know you better.
Yeah. Oh my God, and maybe we'll see each other in the flesh at some point. That's a thing people do now.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.